Good morning, everyone. It is Monday, September 25th, 2017, and yesterday the Green Bay Packers defeated the Cincinnati Bengals in overtime 27-24, a 27-yard field goal from Mason Crosby after the Packers forced a 3-and-out in overtime. That got the job done, and the Packers erased what was a 14-point deficit. They went into the game as heavy favorites. Cincinnati came out and played very, very well in the first half, especially offensively, and the Packers did just enough to get it done. My name is Michael Cohen, and this is the Packers Podcast. Here with me is fellow beat writer Tom Silverstein. And where do you want to start, offense or defense, Tom?
Let's start with the offense.
Okay. So the Packers offense came into this game with no David Bakhtiari and no Randall Cobb, but they did have Brian Bulaga back, though he didn't last for the full game. Aaron Rodgers finishes 28 of 42 for 313 yards, three touchdowns, and one interception that ended up being a pick six. What stood out to you about the offense tonight?
Well, number one, I think you have to give some credit to Cincinnati for a really good game plan. I think they did a really nice job at disguising coverages. They rushed four and got pressure with four. They flooded the secondary when the Packers went to multiple receivers. They did a pretty good job, and they rightly calculated that they could pressure Rodgers with four. And the problem was that, you know, you have to make considerations for Geno Atkins. You absolutely have to double team him almost all the time. And when you've got a guy devoted to that, it means someone's going to be one-on-one with Kyle Murphy. Or sometimes it would be Jari Evans. Sometimes it might be Brian Bulaga. But they did a great job of exploiting that, I thought. And Kyle Murphy barely held up. He had a rough game. So, number one, I give Cincinnati credit. Number two, in the worst of times, when the Packers are playing the worst, they still have Aaron Rodgers, they still have Jordy Nelson, and now they have Geronimo Allison. And we're talking about three guys who basically it would be like going to a three-on-three tournament. And let's say Randall Cobb was your third guy. Well, he wasn't around. He was sick, so you brought in Geronimo Allison to fill in. And they went out and won the game. They basically, the three of them, went out and won that game. So it wasn't pretty, but, you know, sometimes you just have to win games, and I think that's what they did.
No, I agree with you. One of the things that I started doing last year to sort of help myself over the course of the game was, you know, I keep notes by hand of things that I think are important on this little notepad during the game, and at the top I always write coverage and blitz. So that makes me focus on how often a team is blitzing and what type of coverage are they generally playing, man or zone. And as the game went on, it became more and more apparent that the Bengals were only going to rush four, that they were able to get pressure from a lot of different angles. I mean, Carl Lawson, the rookie, finished with, what, 3.5 sacks or 3 sacks or 2.5 sacks, okay, but all two, both, so it was part of 3 sacks, in other words.
Yeah.
And all three of them came against Murphy off that left side. And, you know, they got a lot of pressure with different ways. 9 quarterback hits they were credited for, although none of them seemed to be as vicious as what Rodgers took last week in Atlanta.
Well, 6 of them were sacks.
Exactly.
So, and then the other 3 were hits. I thought he was holding the ball a lot, and I think that's probably because of the coverage. I think that it took a minute for everybody to diagnose what Cincinnati was doing, and they're holding their coverage to the last second, and it took Rodgers a little time to figure that out. The receivers, too. And, you know, ultimately, like I said, I think it just came down to who had the best players at the end.
So, you know, I'm looking over the stat sheet here, and we've got Ty Montgomery, 12 carries, 35 yards, 8 receptions, 15 yards. So altogether, that's 20 touches and 50 yards.
That's just not going to get it done.
What is this running game right now? What do they have?
I don't know. And I was not impressed with Montgomery's blocking either. I thought that some of his chips were terrible, at least some of the ones I saw. I'll have to go back and look at all of them. But that's just that's not production. I think at some point, you know, you got to give Jamal Williams a chance or Aaron Jones a chance. Not that Montgomery isn't a good player, but I think he's being overused. And I thought today he looked sluggish.
You know,
I thought the heat got to him or something.
Thursday evening, we had a chance to hear from the assistant coaches, and Ben Sermons gets up there and says, "We need to get Jamal Williams in the game. There has to be times where I say to myself, okay, Jamal, you get this whole possession."
Mm-hmm.
Jamal Williams got one touch.
Yeah.
One carry, 6 yards, not even a target in
I'll
terms of
passing. I'll be interested to see
passing.
How many snaps he got. It couldn't have been more than six.
And this was a game where because they had so many guys hurt, their inactive list was really easy to pick, and it meant that both Aaron Jones and Devontae Mays were up, mm-hmm. and neither of them played a single snap on the offense.
I don't get that. I really don't. I know that it's easy to just stick with the guy who's the starter, but Montgomery doesn't give you anything more as a blocker than Jamal Williams does. He's a tough runner, and he's good in the pass game because you can split him out, but I don't recall him doing that much either last night. I think they have to figure out a way to get a little bit of more elusiveness in their backfield. I think they need some guys who can do a little bit of jump cut and you know, an Aaron Jones or Mays can do that kind of stuff. They need a change of pace.
I just felt like there was more variety last year, too. I know that – so last year was sort of when all these injuries happened that sort of bred all of this ingenuity and mixing guys in and out there. But I just felt like toward the end of the year you were seeing a few carries a game for Montgomery, maybe two or three for Cobb, maybe three or four for Ripkowski, and it just felt a little bit more unpredictable, even though the yardage might not have been that great. I'm not saying you need to hand the ball to Ripkowski a million times, but he got no touches today either.
That's true, yeah.
And I just wonder what his role kind of is going forward, because they don't even do a lot with I formation anymore. They did some with two tight ends to start the game.
Yeah, he didn't play very many third downs.
No.
And, you know, he's a reasonable blocker. But they really, you know, I'll bet you if we ask McCarthy why that is, it's because it helps dictate the personnel on Cincinnati. It helps dictate that they have to use nickel personnel to account for Montgomery because he's a wide receiver. And so there's something they get out of that. I think when Jamal Williams is in the game, you don't have to go to nickel personnel because he's not going to split out and be a wide receiver like Montgomery. So they obviously like that part about him, but they got to figure out a way to live without him.
Another sort of interesting quirk so far this season has been the tight end position relative to the way it finished last year with Jared Cook. Again, looking over the numbers here, 0 targets for Richard Rodgers, 3 for Lance Kendricks, 4 for Bennett. So Bennett and Kendricks combined for 64 yards, but 51 of them came on that one broken coverage play for Cincinnati. So I don't know. I'm sort of intrigued by Martellus Bennett's role right now. I think he's being asked to do a lot more at the line of scrimmage with the issues on the offensive line. But, I mean, 3 catches, 12 yards, and another key drop on third down.
Yeah. I don't see anything from him in the passing game right now. Right
Nothing.
Now I think he's a non-factor in the passing game. And if I'm them, I would start to work in Kendricks, lessen his snaps and work in Kendricks and Rodgers. Kendricks showed some life.
I agree.
You know, that was a little bit of a scramble play, the
yes.
one that he caught. But he broke a tackle, and I have not seen Martellus Bennett break a tackle. And then he was pretty good in the open field. You saw him. The Packers' offense is built not for a inline tight end. It's built for a guy who can run down the middle of the field. That's why Jared Cook was so good at.
So how badly would they die for an injection of speed right now?
They could use it. Kendricks could give them that. Richard Rodgers doesn't give him speed, but he can run good routes. Bennett just looks slow and sluggish to me now. He doesn't look like he's winning routes. He's not running a lot of routes down the middle of the field. He's running a lot of short hooks and things like that, which, you know, you want to get him the ball in that situation, let him break a tackle, but I haven't seen him break tackles either.
So let's talk about Allison and Nelson. You mentioned the two guys that essentially went out and won this game with Rodgers. Nelson, of course, coming off that quad injury, I don't think there was any question that he was going to try and play today. Mm-hmm. But I thought for sure he was limited when you looked at him a little bit.
Yeah, I
noticed
I did.
On both of his touchdowns, neither one he bothered to try and make a Lambeau leap. Again, that's not anything serious. But
yeah, he doesn't do the Lambeau leap anymore.
Not anymore
at all?
He gave
up on that. Yeah, he gave up on the Lambeau leap.
I could have sworn he still did it a couple times.
No.
Maybe I'm – okay. I must be mistaken there. But anyway, I didn't think he was moving as crisply as he normally does.
Yeah, I don't think so. He couldn't get open deep.
No.
From what I could tell, he didn't have a lot of endurance on that muscle in his leg, I think.
But with Geronimo Allison, I mean, we talked about how going into this season, it would be sort of a puzzle for Luke Getsy to figure out playing time for all these guys. I got to think after a performance like this, it's going to be hard to keep him off the field at this point.
They have to figure out a way to get him on the field. Now, today would have been, or last night would have been a perfect game for Randall Cobb because Rodgers was out of the pocket scrambling a lot. Cobb is his best scrambling option. Cobb is the one guy who can get open. Cobb is not their best route runner, but in the scramble situation, he's probably their best receiver. So the challenge will be how do they split that up? Allison's a legitimate receiver, and what I really liked was about him was in crunch time, he found a way to get open.
Yes.
He had those two sideline routes where one was a comeback, and I'm not sure what the other one. What he toe-tapped on both sides on the sideline. He dropped the one over the middle, but he was open, and then he came back and made another big play. And then, of course, that last play, really – you know, if he goes down on the first tackle or whatever, you know, doesn't make a move, that's not a guaranteed 3 points.
No, it's
not. Something could happen. They could have gotten a sack, whatever. So that was really clutch for him to make those moves.
When you talk about a player that is getting targets from Rodgers in crunch time, I don't think there's any question anymore that he trusts Allison in just about any situation. The thing that really impressed me about Allison was essentially what you mentioned in that when the game needed a big play, it wasn't Davante Adams who they were going to, who you probably would guess is the guy. Instead, they go to Allison, and with the exception of that one drop, he made three at least big plays, finished with 6 catches for 122. And so I just think that he gives them a different element, sort of, because of the way he's built. We've talked about it on this podcast before, but his catch radius is huge, mm-hmm. and Rodgers uses that to his advantage along the sideline. You know, when you look at his reps in a game like this, they had no Randall Cobb, and Trevor Davis doesn't get a target. Jeff Janis doesn't get on the field.
Right.
You know, are they content to basically write off those guys, barring injury, and go with Allison?
Yes. Yeah, there's no question. Allison is legitimate number three material. I think he could be the number three if you want him. I mean, if you want him to be number three ahead of Cobb, which he was tonight or Sunday night, you can do that. And I think Allison will continue to carve out a role. I think this is going to be one of those seasons, and it's almost like every season is like that, where someone different every week is going to have the 100-yard game. The one thing you're going to know is Jordy Nelson is going to get the ball at some point somehow.
Especially in the red zone.
Yeah. And the rest of the time, Adams will have a 100-yard game at some point. Allison had his 100-yard game. Cobb will have a 100-yard game. It's just going to go that way, and that's really not a bad thing. It's like the Bengals had A.J. Green. You know, they got him 10 catches for 111 yards, but what else? You know, they don't really have another great option. So I think it's fine that it works that way.
Yeah, I mean, with the Bengals, aside from Green having 111, as you mentioned, the only other receivers to have a catch were Tyler Boyd and Brandon LaFell, and they combined for 2 catches for 16 yards.
Right.
So everything else had to either be running backs or their tight ends.
Right.
Now, with the short turnaround, I think there's some pressure on the offensive line now. You know, you look at Bakhtiari. Who knows if he's going to be ready for the Thursday game?
Yeah.
And then Bulaga drops out again with the ankle problem. We don't know what happens there.
I'm eager to find out what that was about because he worked out on the sideline as though – I mean, he didn't look terrible. He was still doing pass sets and everything, but he must not have felt just Right. Something happened. Maybe it swelled up on him. They might be able to play him Thursday night and then give him 10 days rest or whatever. It's possible that Bakhtiari was close Sunday and they just decided, let's get him ready for Thursday, give him the extra time. Maybe. I don't know that for a fact. But they could really use him on Thursday. They need him on Thursday more than they needed him yesterday because Chicago's front four is really good and it's a division game.
Absolutely. Anything else on defense before we switch over to the offensive side of the ball?
You mean the other way around?
It's too late at night. I can't handle this.
Yeah.
Anything else on offense before we switch to defense?
I would say not really. I mean, the offensive line we talked about, Bennett we talked about, they got to find a way to get him involved. They got to get him, find out what his role is going to be because right now there's no role for him other than blocking.
So on the defensive side of the ball, I think mm-hmm. the first thing that we all noticed was something that we saw during the week in practice, which was Morgan Burnett has another new position.
Yeah.
I mean, I've only been here 3 seasons, and I think he's played about 12 different spots. What is he now?
Well, he's a nickel corner now, and that's what he played almost the entire game was the position that Demarius Randall and Quentin Rollins have been playing. And then Josh Jones becomes the nitro. So that's four safeties on the field at once. Then they put in Marwin Evans. I was surprised they did that. I thought they would have been better off with Burnett deep and taking Evans off the field and then putting in one of their slot corners. I'll be interested to hear what Joe Witt has to say about that or Capers tomorrow on Monday because I didn't think Marwin Evans played very well, and I just have a hard time with that lineup. And so I don't know. It ended up working for him, mostly because Josh Jones played out of his mind. But there's some weakness to that, and I'll go back to what I wrote on Sunday. I can't believe they're going to be able to consistently stop the run with that lineup.
And that's what I wrote my sidebar about for the Monday paper and online. Essentially, you know, you can say that, okay, they didn't give up a touchdown in the second half, which is – you can't knock that at all. The defense did not give up a touchdown in the second half. But when I started to really look at some of the numbers, it was not all that different from what Atlanta was able mm-hmm. to do against them running the ball. They had 30 carries for 110 yards, which you don't look at the 3.7 per carry and say that's great, but 110 yards on the ground is 110 yards mm-hmm. on the ground. Mm-hmm. Joe Mixon had 101 total yards and 9 plays of 5 or more yards, which is pretty impressive. And total, he averaged 4.8 yards a touch. And so essentially what I wrote about is that this was another huge test for this Nitro defense, and it came down to that one third down when they could have stood up and made the stop and gotten Rodgers a chance, and it didn't even matter because Mixon slipped.
Yeah.
So we don't know what this defense is capable of yet,
right.
But I think the early signs are teams can run on them.
Yeah, and who in the stadium thought that Mixon wasn't going to get that first down?
Not me. I thought for sure.
Imagine there were many people who did. He was – they could not – plug up the inside at all. And when the defensive line can't get it done, your last hope is the inside linebacker. Now, I got to give Blake Martinez a lot of credit.
Yeah.
He played his butt off. He did everything you could ask of a guy playing in the middle. There's some times he got knocked off the ball, but what did he have? 11 tackles?
11 tackles, 1 tackle for loss, and him and Josh Jones combined for 23 tackles.
Yeah. But you still see instances when you just need some more heft in the middle. You need an explosive player. And what did Clay Matthews do today?
Not a whole lot. Matthews had 3 tackles, no quarterback hits, no tackles for loss, no sacks.
Yeah. So, okay, maybe they were able to double a little bit on him because Perry wasn't there. But right now, I think his best position is inside. And if he's not consistently getting sacks and pressure, why not? Or, you know, some combination of him and Ahmad Brooks. Ahmad Brooks can play inside too. And he had a sack. He, you know, I got to see what the rest of his game was like. But when Perry comes back, they got to figure out if they want to, how they're going to really stop the run. Having Perry in the lineup will help a lot. So will Mike Daniels. It's two of their best run stoppers. But I still think the middle has to be protected, and I think Matthews and Brooks do that better than Martinez.
You mentioned Brooks, and I wanted to read a quote from him today because, I mean, there's a lot of guys in there that are very hesitant to admit that they played poorly, even in games where they obviously played poorly. Mm-hmm. And somebody asked Brooks how he thought he played in the extended role tonight with no Perry, and his quote was, "The first half, I didn't feel too good about my performance. I felt like I was out of position on a few of those plays. I felt like I was on the ground way too much today. So there are things I need to clean up." That's pretty blunt.
That's pretty darn honest. I give him a lot of credit for saying that.
Especially the part, I mean, you can say you're out of position, and he could say, yeah, I'm new to this. I'm still learning the scheme. But to say that I was on the ground too much essentially mm-hmm. means that he was manhandled.
Yeah, it does. Well, it means that he wasn't fighting off blocks. And he was letting, yeah, he's letting the offensive lineman get the best of him. So
you know, if Perry has to miss another game, and I'd say there's probably a decent chance of that coming off surgery,
probably.
You know, it would be only a week. Do you think we see essentially the same thing, or do the Packers make any changes between now and Thursday?
Well, a lot probably depends on Jake Ryan's status, because he's still probably their best run defending inside linebacker, although I got to say that Blake Martinez is more active. Ryan's a little tougher in the hole, but just because of size, and Martinez, I think, is pretty slippery. But, you know, maybe against the Bears, they just go to straight nickel and play two inside linebackers. That's kind of one thing they could do. I would still want Josh Jones in the middle, and if you're going to do that, then there's no reason why you can't use Matthews there once in a while and Brooks there once in a while, just to add some toughness.
Is it a fair assessment, do you think, to say that when Mike Daniels is not in there, teams look at Quentin Dial, Kenny Clark, Dean Lowry, Ricky Jean-Francois, and tonight Montrevious Adams, and they say, we don't have to worry about the pass rush whatsoever? I mean, with the rare exception, I feel like that's the case.
I do too. Yeah, I don't think there's much they have to worry about. Their nickel rush is not very good without Mike Daniels. And so, you know, they replace those guys with linebackers on third down. There's a reason they do that. You know, they used Brooks, Matthews, and Fackrell. And then they bring in, like, what, Dean Lowry or Kim
Yeah, they
Clark.
Used Lowry or Clark. They alternated tonight.
Yeah. We know that Quentin Dial and Ricky John Francois and Kenny Clark are not pass rushers. That's a given. You know, inside pass rushers are rare to find. And in the case of Mike Daniels, though, he not only is he their best inside rusher, he's their best run player. So they miss a lot from not having him in there. And, yes, they don't have any rush. And the best thing they did was blitz off the corner on third downs late in the game. You know, Josh Jones was really good at that.
And that's something you mentioned on the podcast earlier in the week, that, you know, with his speed coming off the edge or coming off the slot, that it's an element that Randall and Rollins can't match combined with his physicality. Sure enough, he finishes with two sacks. I was extremely impressed with him today. I thought for sure, based on the way he played in OTAs and camp, that there would be moments, and maybe there still will be, that his aggressiveness would get him into a little bit of trouble. And there really weren't too many times today where he caused a lot of issues with over-pursuit or too much physicality or anything.
Right, right. I think he was probably responsible for the touchdown to Giovanni Bernard.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
If I had to guess who had played that right and who had played it wrong, I would say that King probably played it right and Jones didn't. It's also natural that an inside backer would go and cover the back out of the backfield. But I know that one rush he had where he had the sack, he just blew up Tyler Croft at the line of scrimmage. I mean, just guy He just pushed him aside. And he's going to be able to do that when he gets matched up against backs and tight ends. He's a powerful guy. And, no, I didn't see him really overextend himself. And I thought whenever he got to the ball carrier went down. There weren't too many missed tackles by him.
What did you think of Kevin King drawing the assignment on A.J. Green tonight?
Great decision. And all things considered, I thought he did a really good job. You're not going to... As a rookie, you're not going to shut A.J. Green down. And
even as a veteran, you might not.
Yeah, looking back, I think they probably regret now not putting him on Julio Jones. He's going to get beat. He's going to have some moments. But, boy, he competes and he tackles. You know, if he gives up a reception, he gets the guy down on the ground. So I could see him following receivers, tall receivers like that, throughout the year.
There's a lot of plays, too, where his length does cause some serious problems, especially along the sideline, out routes and things like that. He's able to close down angles between the quarterback, the receiver, and him in ways that, you know, shorter guys with smaller or shorter limbs can't do. And so I think that he's really, really been impressive so far, and I think he's developed faster than I anticipated. So, you know,
could tell he knows the game.
Exactly.
He's a smart player. He seems – you don't see him making bust coverages.
No.
I haven't. And the other thing is that with that length, he's got foot speed. You know, most of the guys who are that long and that tall don't have foot speed.
I.e. Ladarius Gunter.
Yeah. Yeah, guys like that. They just – you know, a Cam Chancellor. Now, he's not as big as Cam Chancellor, you know, but – that's the type of 6'3 guy with long arms that you typically play at safety because he doesn't have that kind of foot speed.
So if Devon House is able to play Thursday, what do you think we can expect from a cornerback rotation?
I think it's got to be House and King to start.
With Morgan Burnett again in the slot, do you think they'll do that?
Maybe. I think with the Bears, you got to anticipate a little more power football. And Jordan Howard went off after a really bad game. And he went off against the Steelers, who are no slouches. And I can see the Bears with Sitton and Kyle Long. I can see them just teeing it up and daring the Packers to stop them.
So if teams go into a game like that and they run the ball really well, are there ways, do you think, that the Packers can get Josh Jones on the field that won't be detrimental? Like, because I just don't see them taking Burnett off the field unless they have to, and they're not going to take Clinton Dix off. So how do you get him on the field?
That's a good question. I'm not really sure how you do that, other than you can play nickel, and you have to play Burnett back and Jones up.
Yeah.
Or
make one of them a corner, a nickel corner.
Yeah, or you bring Burnett up to play the nickel, and then you put Jones in the box, just like you would on any eight-man front. And that's doable, but I would still want – you still need to have at least Burnett and a linebacker, but you probably still want two linebackers.
Do you think it's been a quiet start so far for Clinton Dix? I know his assignments have probably been a little unusual because if they weren't playing Atlanta or Cincinnati right off the bat, he wouldn't be utilized as much in this bracket over the top role. But I just feel like we're three games into this, and I can't really remember a big play that he's made with the exception of that one where he knocked Darbo out of bounds in the Seattle game down by the goal line.
Yeah, I think in this role, he's going to be judged because of the Nitro defense. He's going to be judged by how many balls get over his head. That's his primary assignment right now, is don't let any balls get over your head. And I think we've had, I'm trying to remember. There was a deep ball somewhere that he was involved, but I can't remember exactly. It's too late at night. That'll be the measuring stick for him. I thought there were a couple plays where he got some slow breaks and might have been able to get an interception. But, you know, for now, that's going to be his role, I think.
I wonder if a guy like him would sort of get frustrated at all by that, because you know, there's been times over the last couple of years when he's made a lot of plays at or near the line of scrimmage, even in the backfield. And if he's essentially being asked to play center field for the most part, I wonder if he would get a little bugged by that as the season goes on.
Well, yeah, but if I were Capers, I'd point out that Earl Thomas doesn't play at the line of scrimmage. Earl Thomas plays deep center field every single snap, and he makes Pro Bowls doing that. And Clinton Dix can do the same, but he's got to be, he's not as fast as Earl Thomas, but there will be opportunities there.
Three tackles for Clinton Dix.
Yeah. I mean, he's the goalie. He's back there making sure the ball doesn't get over his head.
Anything else on the defense?
Let's see. Well, one thing we didn't mention, I don't think we did, was that Quentin Rollins is now the missing man. He's basically in witness protection. Because he didn't play hardly at all until Evans went out, and then they moved Jones to safety, and
right.
Then they brought Rollins in to play. He fell fast.
How good did he look the first week or two of camp?
He was the best corner they had in camp.
By far.
But you can see his limitations with speed. And, you know, Randall, I don't know what he would have done if House were up. You know, if House had played, he might have been sitting right next to Rollins on the bench. I think they made a decision between Randall and Rollins. And right now, they're not in their plans. Their plans are big.
As many safeties as possible.
Yeah, big, long, tall guys who can defend against the pass. And that's – they don't want 5'11 guys anymore.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it's a short week, so I don't know if they're going to let us talk to assistant coaches. They probably won't.
No, maybe not.
But I would have been really intrigued to hear what Joe Witt had to say, as you mentioned, because, you know, Joe Witt is a guy that when you criticize or question some of his guys, he gets a little hot under the collar.
Yeah, he does.
And now he's essentially in the same boat that Scott McCurley has been in the last year, which is us asking him, well, what do you do when your guys don't play at inside linebacker mm-hmm. anymore? And that's the situation that they're in. Now, again, I have no idea if House will be healthy, but I think you're right. I think there's a chance that Randall and Rollins both find themselves on the bench.
Yeah. I think maybe special matchups where they're facing a smaller receiver and they want a quicker guy like Randall on them. But right now, King is one of your guys, and House, you know, you got to let House play himself out of that position. He's not been great, but he's been good enough. And we need to find out whether he's, you know, legitimately number one corner, although King is moving into that position. The one thing I will say about King, let's temper our enthusiasm that nobody knows that much about him. Opponents don't know
Very
much
true.
About him, and they're going to be dissecting him, and they're going to find ways to trick him. And so let's like everybody, let's judge him over the course of more than three games.
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially extrapolating the same argument you made about Kyle Murphy. Once he plays a game at tackle and has something on film, it gives opponents a totally different method of preparation than when they're coming into this cold. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on in the coming weeks. Anything else?
So, you know, one thing I would say is, and you know, I had to rank the players 1 through 53 before the season, and I picked Bakhtiari number 2. And I'll stand by that. He is the second most important player they have on this team behind Rodgers. Their offense is different without him, and they need him back bad.
It certainly seems that way. A short week for the Packers. They'll be back on the field Thursday night against the Bears. I don't know what we're going to do with podcasts between now and then, but we'll have one at least.
Oh,
for sure.
Man, we'll have one every half hour. Tune in.
How was the live blog?
Oh, boy, was that interesting. If you were on the live blog last night and you were one of the people who were in a dog-kicking mood, shame on you. Not that you can't be critical. I think it's perfectly good to be critical. But, you know, Pat, we try to make this the intellectuals Packer coverage. You know, we want to look beyond the fire Dom Capers, or these guys can't run, these guys can't stop the run, same old thing. I want to hear legitimate criticisms. So that's my challenge to all you people. Please come with legitimate criticisms.
So they have a short week to prepare such criticisms, but you'll have the live blog back Thursday night.
Thursday night. I'll be ready. I'll be ready to put the smack down.
All right. We will talk to you guys soon. Take care of business.